There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday. Another hour of live local talk. And coming up at 1:30, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson joins us. And right now at 1 o'clock, my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. from Kennedy for Alabama. You can catch him tonight at
6 o'clock p.m. See? Live on FM Talk 106.5.
And, you know, you can brag a little bit
yes,
here.
You're now also, we have expanded into the Huntsville market. We are on WVNN. On Sunday afternoons from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. So good really stuff. Excited about having that relationship as well.
I'm proud of you, man. This is good. All right. A lot to get into today. The subject you and I were just talking about during the news break. It's not going to be exciting to anybody because we're not on other sides of it. But Juneteenth being signed into law as a federal holiday.
Really interesting. Passed unanimously in the U.S. Senate.
And it was only 12 dissents in the House?
Yeah, a handful in the House of Representatives. A long time coming, but good to see that it's something that we as a nation value to commemorate the ending of enslaved people in the United States of America. So definitely a good thing.
Yeah, so, of course, the only other trouble I would start is I agree with you. I want to see Juneteenth a federal holiday. I do agree we probably have too many federal holidays, but which one do we go after is going to get me in trouble.
Probably. Well, you're definitely going to get in trouble from some constituency, right?
Right.
My personal favorite would be to get rid of Columbus Day.
Yeah.
Probably change that into Indigenous Peoples Day. Mm-hmm. And or you can move it and make Election Day a federal holiday. I don't think a whole bunch of people are going to argue with you on that one.
Here we go. I think now the Indigenous Peoples Day, which is the 28th, I think, is when it's on the calendar. Google mm-hmm. tells us when. Federal government doesn't tell us when.
That assumes
holidays
Google's
are.
Correct.
Google,
okay.
Google tells us. The Columbus Day thing, pretty foundational in the, although you could argue Leif Erikson finds the New World before Columbus, you know.
Well, you can't
Europeans.
Find some place where people already are.
Well, for Europeans, right?
So, yeah.
So, so he comes out and you replace with indigenous. I don't know. Is it? Do we have? Because our days celebrate either individuals, or maybe it does. Or some significant date or thing. You know.
Well, the thing that's actually interesting is what is it that we as a country value?
Okay.
Right, and then
most people
we
say
have,
days off.
Well, I was going to say just as a person who would rather be sitting here talking to you than actually having to go back to work here in a few minutes.
That's right.
I can understand the days off, but on the serious tip, it's what do we value as a nation,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay for what we value as call it the top 10 things or the things that we end up doing as federal holidays. There's always going to be an 11th thing or a 12th thing. That doesn't mean it's not important. And
right.
It's something that we don't value. But I think it's good for us to have a conversation from time to time because to the point of the fiscally responsible mm-hmm. portion of my brain is sure, at a certain point, you do need to limit them.
All right. Let's talk about the fiscal side of it. I just got done talking to Mark Colson, Alabama Trucking Association,
mm-hmm.
the truckers, his representation of the truckers in Alabama saying, he even said it wasn't that 15 or 12 was too much and 6 was okay and 3,
mm-hmm.
he said it's existential, not okay, to put the tolling on the truckers to pay for a bridge.
So this one, I'm actually thinking back to the original Stop the Tolls movement,
mm-hmm.
and you want to talk about politics make strange bedfellows. You had the most progressive wing of the Democratic Party, the most conservative wing of the Republican Party, all here in South Alabama, united in the fact that nobody wanted to pay a toll.
I don't know when I've seen a movement like that before, but it absolutely happened that way.
It absolutely did. And so it's just interesting that it seems like it's the zombie that we thought was dead that kind of came back to life.
Right.
And now politically, it looks like they're trying to isolate so that it's them paying the tolls.
It's the
not
lodging tax
us
thing.
Paying the tolls. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
But it all comes back to this thing that either there's not the will or there's not the money to do this. You know,
this is actually a permutation on what we were just talking about with Juneteenth. It's what are our priorities?
Okay.
And then what priorities are we willing to fund?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if this just happens to be one of our highest priorities, then we just need to figure out how to fund it relative to other things. And so you have the combination of the gas tax. That was one thing. So there's some money there. And then, of course, we know from a federal infrastructure perspective that something is going to end up happening, whether it ends up happening at the proposed level from President Biden or if it ends up happening at a compromise level that's something smaller than that.
Which is, by the way, y'all, smaller is still big.
Yeah, it's okay. Close to $1 trillion, right. I think a little less. But there's going to be money there, right? And so it seems to me that the most prudent thing for us to do right now is to put pressure to make sure that at least some of that money comes into the Southwest Alabama direction rather than just saying, okay, let's punish the truckers by having them be the ones to pay the toll.
So how can we – you mentioned that during the toll debate you had, you know, strange bedfellows, mm-hmm. disparate groups coming together. Could you realign this in a commonality to say we need to build the bridge and here's the plan to do it? We're going to allocate this from, the bill passes. We have this much federal money and we're going to go. You know what I'm saying? Just get a group of people that the commonality is we're Alabamians that live in this neck of the woods.
Well, and then the one thing that's fortunate about us in this particular situation, which makes this conversation a little different than perhaps the Highway 45 conversation, is that is such a strategic location, right? And so when you just talk about the safety aspect of having – we have weather in the Gulf right now and needing to be able to do evacuations and do those evacuations quickly and at scale, this is definitely an area where we need to have an additional bridge or tunnel. And it's something that we as a nation need to figure out how to pay for because it's not just us who are driving back and forth across the bay.
That's for sure. But we're the most important.
Yes. At least we are for this particular conversation today.
What are we going to do here on the fiscal discussion here when it comes to, I'm surprised it's taken this long, but we're now seeing signs of inflation that are showing. I mean, it's registering.
There's no doubt about it.
Somebody like me, squawking about it, this Democrat president and what he's done.
Sure.
It's showing up. And this is going to affect.
I was going to say, there's enough real stuff that you don't have to make up stuff. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's real stuff. And that's going to affect. You're talking about something that's a commonality. Mm-hmm. That affects everybody. And the lower your income is, and President Biden said he's not going to tax people under $400,000. He's going to go for the. Inflation is, in its way, a tax. At least it's a tax out of your wallet.
I don't know that I would call it a tax. I understand when you talk about your disposable income ends up decreasing as a result of that. And it is something that needs to be taken into consideration. Sure.
So, and then the Fed comes out and they said, yeah, we're going to slow it down. And then they said, today, 2023. I know they don't want to shock the market or anything, but what could happen by 23?
Well, it'll be four more things we haven't thought about yet. But what is your alternate proposal, right? What do you think the Fed should be doing right now?
The Fed can't control that. I think we should have slowed down the amount of money we're putting into the system, devaluing the dollars. But, they're not listening to me.
Yeah, and that's the same thing that we would have been saying regardless of who was in the administration, right?
I said the same thing.
This is one of the areas where you and I have historically aligned is that we need to have a set of priorities. And then those priorities should be funded to a certain point. You can never fund every single priority that you had. It's just not possible. You couldn't print enough money to do that. And so one of the things that I think would ultimately make us better would be if we were a little bit more disciplined about how it is that we spent from year to year.
All right. This one, not really a policy discussion, but it's one that's in my heart. And I'm trying to get my head around. I want to get your perspective on it. Because I told the missus last night, I said, I can't wait to talk to Robert about this. So you're a Democrat. You support President Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. His son, Hunter Biden.
Yes.
There's a lot of things we could talk about here. But the most recent story that has really gotten my attention that it's not being covered by mainstream media at all.
Right.
Is, they've got the recordings of him with racial slur, more today, but using N-word and all this stuff. And, I all the stones are thrown at conservatives that almost by default that they have some kind of bigotry or whatever. At least that's the caricature that's made. And then you have the president.
I'm not necessarily sure I would align to that caricature.
Well, I'm not saying you do. I'm just going to throw out what is happening in mainstream.
Okay.
And then you have the president's son. This stuff is not like a maybe. It's there it is. He's doing it. And they're not. And they're not covering this. And I mean, if you want to play the whataboutism game, if this would have been Donald Trump Jr., Lord knows what would have happened. But I'm bothered that it doesn't seem like the media on that side or mainstream side is doing its job at all.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this quite often, that media at the national level has a natural left lean, and media at the local level, particularly here in Alabama, has a right lean. And so sometimes I am challenged to watch that, because I think the great thing about having a free press is the ability of the press to hold people accountable.
Right.
And so while I don't think the accountability lies with President Biden, there is unequivocally accountability that lies with Hunter Biden. And like you mentioned before, it's not a rumor as to whether or not he used that language. It was something that was actually captured on audio. So yes, absolutely. I think the national media can do a better job.
It's like they've leaned so far, they've fallen over, in my opinion, where I sit.
No, I think but to a certain extent, we're talking about two different things. So you and I align on there should be more accountability for Hunter Biden based upon what we see and hear right now. There's no pushback on that whatsoever. But when you're looking at it from the media perspective, they're not necessarily only trying to hold people accountable. What they were trying to do was, based upon the way that President Trump treated them, they were looking and seeking to try to find things to hammer him on.
Right.
So because they're not trying to do that with President Biden doesn't make them right. But like you said, you have to be pragmatic about the whole thing as well, that relationships in media do matter. And sometimes those end up outweighing things that they should not.
I don't know, you see some examples of Caitlin Collins asking questions of the president. She was famous for CNN's Caitlin Collins getting in trouble with former President Trump, got in trouble with President Biden at the Geneva yesterday. And I thought he would say she should find another line of work or something like that, because she was questioned him. And I enjoyed that.
I didn't hear this one. So what happened?
I'll tell you what. We're up against the break. We'll go to the break. We'll come back and do that. Coming right back. Robert Sounds Kennedy good. Jr. Kennedy for Alabama tonight at
6 p.m.
Right here on FM Talk. And, of course, up in that other station.
WBNN.
That other ragtaggle group up there in Huntsville. But all right. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Reminded you to go download the free and fantastic and brand new FM Talk 106.5 app. So if you got an iPhone, you go to iTunes Store. You got an Android, go to Google Play. And make sure you don't put a point between the 6 and 5, because I don't know, it messes it up. Just search for FM Talk. So FMTALK 1065, and you'll see our logo there. Download that free app and get access to all the podcasts, the streaming of your favorite shows. You get the one button call where you can call the station. You can also text through that app and leave us those talk back. You'll see the mic at the bottom of the screen. You press that button, lets you record a message for us. And right now, we're getting dad jokes. Right now, the competition for the big prize that we talked about earlier, the best dad joke, y'all have been putting them in throughout the day, do it tonight and into the morning, and then Dalton and I will play those back and let us all vote on those in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow. But use the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, which also has your traffic, up-to-date traffic feature on there, weather, all that in one place. It's the FM Talk 106.5 app on iTunes and Google Play. All right, my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio, of course, tonight, Kennedy for Alabama at 6. Supreme Court, we'll finish with Caitlin Collins thing for a second. I guess the thing I liked about it was that Caitlin Collins, at least yesterday, showed that she was other than other CNN reporters like Acosta, Caitlin Collins, the thorn she was in former President Trump's side, she was yesterday in President Biden's side. So I enjoyed that.
And this goes to what we were talking about before. Media holds the powerful accountable, right? And so
some of them.
Seeing that At least occasionally.
Yes.
Right? Seeing that at least occasionally, I think on balance is a good thing, even if President Biden probably got a little prickly.
Yeah, he did. He did. There was finger wagging.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with supporting somebody and then holding them accountable during the periods of time when they're doing something they probably shouldn't do. But, wish we had more of that.
Yeah, and it's I don't know what comes out of that. They'll go into the meetings. You know, here you got President Biden and you got Putin going to the meeting. And they're in there for 2.5 hours mm-hmm. or whatever. I really want to know what they talk about, because I think everything else has been worked out by other people in the departments.
Well, yeah, it's the people who are doing the real work, right? Yeah. So I think I was listening to you and Dalton this morning. I think I sent you a text message mm-hmm. when you started telling me about the people analyzing the tie and what that communicated based upon the
pattern, and the body language and all that stuff.
I was like, really? I mean, it's just like, come on, guys. Let's keep our eyes on the ball here. So what's really important?
Let's talk about it. Important stuff. So Supreme Court season right now.
It is.
You know, in June, we get a lot of decisions here. So the headline says it's upholding Obamacare, Affordable Care Act,
right,
in their decision. But it was a question of standing. 7-2, Supreme mm-hmm. Court upholds, in a way, or tells right. Texas and other Republican-led states that they didn't have standing to show that they were injured or could have future injuries from Affordable Care.
Who were the two who voted against it?
Let's see. Yeah, probably Alito. I don't have it in front of me. Let's see. I think I'll find it for you in a second.
Gotcha. Okay. I was just curious.
But because the idea was, and that you heard from a lot of Democrats, right. heard that you put these conservatives, you're stacking it. Former President mm-hmm. Trump stacking the court, and it's going to be, sure. it's, oh, we got to pack the court because we're never going to get a decision that's anything but right. And here's one right off the bat.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing. That does not forgive the previous Senate Majority Leader for not giving Merrick Garland a hearing. But yeah, you know, it's never quite as bad as people think it's going to be, and it's never quite as good as other people think it's going to be, right? So I think the important thing here is that you have a lot of people who got access to health care who didn't have it before, who at least for this period of time don't necessarily have to worry about that going away. And I think that's something we should all applaud.
Yeah, so it's several of the court's conservatives, including Chief Justice John Roberts, joined Breyer's opinion on Thursday. Others voting with Breyer were Justices Clarence Thomas, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett.
Okay. So, you know, the one thing that I'm curious to ask you is, when you look at the Affordable Care Act and the individual components that actually went into it, with the exception of the individual mandate, mm-hmm. right? Because that was the part that was essentially severed before. What do you disagree with?
That's the only part. Mine's a constitutional question being forced to. I said this a lot of times when Barack Obama was president. I said, there's a lot of stuff that he talks about that I like these things. These are mm-hmm. good things. I just don't believe it's the job of government to enforce it.
I got you. So yours is more philosophical. It's
and not constitutional.
The role of the
yeah.
It's not the role of government. Okay.
And having government mandate something, mm-hmm. you can have things that are to step in and say, we got a mandate. You got to do this to make this thing work.
Sure.
And you don't have the right to just say, no.
Yeah, so.
But then you can turn around and say it's unworkable if you don't have this forced into it. But to me, the bigger challenge is the eroding of our individual rights.
Well, you're internally consistent in the standpoint that as a libertarian, that would be your point of view. So
yeah.
No pushback on that. The reason why I was surfacing it for the purposes of conversation is, when there were folks during the last presidential cycle who were advocating for single payer,
uh-huh.
now I'm with you,
yeah.
right? Because now I don't have the choice anymore.
But a lot
right?
of those conservatives see this as a step to single payer.
Yeah, but it's not.
It has been
because,
in many,
you know. Because there are plenty of folks of left of center who are like, you know what? I like my private health insurance that I have as a result of the work that I do, right? And I would like to have the choice. Do I do something that's government-sponsored, or do I do something through the private sector? So as long as I have that choice, I think expanding it and giving more people access is probably better than the alternative.
What happens here, though, once again, it's a decision of who has standing and not yep. really on the constitutional merits. As always, enjoy our conversations. We'll be listening to you tonight at 6.
Hey, it's a pleasure. You have a good week, and everybody stay safe with the rainy weather coming this way.
That's right. About to get your yards watered in a big way. All right, coming right back, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, our guest. We'll be right back.
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Remember, check out the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, ready for you if you're an iTunes user, an Apple user over on iTunes, and if you're an Android user, go to Google Play. Just make sure to put don't put a point between the 6 and 5. Just FMTALK 1065. Brand new app. All right, welcome on to the air. Mobile's Mayor Sandy Stimson. Good to get you back on the show, Mayor.
Good to be here, Sean.
A lot to talk about here, and I want to kind of dive into, the money part of this before we go any further. We've had a lot of discussion about the money that's come to the state of Alabama through the federal government and trying to explain and break down how part stays, with Montgomery or Goat Hill, but part comes to the counties and municipalities. Can you talk about what that means for Mobile? What was it, a lump sum, or how did they do that?
Yes, it's actually, we're going to receive two lump sums of what directly comes to the city of Mobile. We have already received a check of $29.1 million, and about this time next year, we will receive another check for $29.1 million. In addition to that, and we don't know the timing, but we could receive additional funding from the state of Alabama for what they think are viable projects for the city.
Okay, so there is so it's not just you could apply to the state for additional funding, even though it's not on top of what we received as a city.
That is our understanding. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. With that money coming in. You've already made some news here, and we talk about these bonuses for city employees. Can you walk through what that plan is, what you've projected here, or what you proposed?
Yeah. So Sean, first off, I think we need to back up to what was the intent of the entire program as it came out of Washington D.C. And we have certain guidelines that we have to follow on the expenditure of the funds. Now, when you look at the program and it was to provide relief for businesses and people, but especially those businesses and individuals and communities who suffered disproportionately during COVID. I mean, that's almost the verbatim language that comes with the money. And so we refer to it as being there were seven buckets that we could draw from for how to spend the money. And so what we did was really we said some we don't even qualify for, so we just eliminated. Matter of fact, there's one bucket we just eliminated, and that was the replace revenue loss. And what we decided to do was that we were going to focus our money on people and services, okay, primarily people first. And that's what we called it as we rolled it out to the city council. Within that was a bonus payment of $5,000 per city employee and $2,500 for a part-time city employee. And I would remind you that in most of the other large cities, during COVID, there was bonus money paid, there was special allocations to city employees. We didn't participate in that. Our city employees worked their, I'm not saying they worked exactly their normal hours, but we gave no bonuses or wage increases, and so we thought that based on where we were, and this was one of the buckets that we could draw from for that purpose, that we would take opportunity of it and give it to the city employees.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you mentioned something too about the direction of this money from the American Rescue Plan Act. It is definitely more wide open than it was with the CARES Act. I mean, CARES Act was all kind of earmarks, right? I mean, you had to absolutely put it to fighting COVID.
But even within fighting COVID, there were some things that I would say for some communities, it may have been a stretch, to say you were really fighting COVID with those dollars. But, in this situation, again, there are seven areas where you can spend the money. It can be premium pay for essential workers, equity-focused services, broadband infrastructure to address the negative economic impacts in your community. There was also water and sewer infrastructure and the support of public health response. So, all of those are opportunities, but then as you start to drill down to it, where, and I don't mean to sound funny when I say this, where's the rubber meet the road on each one of these? And that's where the details are, and that's where there'll be additional conversation to determine if we have properly spent it.
Just joining us, talking to Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, and the money allocated here for the city through the American Rescue Plan Act. As you talk about the, first of all, the bonuses, that's part of this, and then a listing of different projects. So you said to help recover. So I saw that list after the meeting the other day. Can you kind of give us the highlights of that, of where money would be allocated to what sectors, what buckets supply where?
Okay, so under the, like what we call addressing negative economic impacts, there'll be small business assistance. There'll be rental assistance for individuals and businesses. There'll be down payment assistance, utility assistance, social services assistance, and possibly some tourism. But it gets really specific about how you use money for tourism. It's almost exclusively got to be used for marketing.
Okay. Well, what about on the assistance? I thought that was interesting. Is this retroactive? And walk us through how that would work. Would a business or individual come to the city and say, hey, I need assistance going forward with, like, for example, rent or utilities? Or would this help with what they paid in the past? How does that work?
Okay, so, you know, the way we're looking at this is that we have a department set up, and it really comes under our neighborhood development, and it's how we administer CDBG funds. So they have a process, an application process for acquiring or asking for any of our home funding or our CDBG funds, which are all federal. So you have to be very careful of making sure you check all the boxes to make sure somebody qualifies. We're going to use that department to assess whether the business or the individual qualifies for these grants or for these loans or for this assistance.
Now on the money spent here on, and I don't know what bucket it would come from, but the housing part, the turning the old Gayford's building into affordable housing, is that to go in and to let a company come in there and build it out, or are you going to
Yes.
Okay.
So this is the deal in Gayford's. That comes under what we put in, what we call our bucket five. It's the equity focused services, and really that has to do primarily with affordable housing. So think about Gayford's, abandoned for about 40 years, severely blighted, right in the heart of downtown Mobile. Because of its condition, nobody can go in there and renovate it and spend, let's say, their money from an investment standpoint, and then be able to either rent apartments or sell condominiums or make retail out of it and get a return on the investment. Just it's upside down because of the cost of renovation. Because it's a historic building, you know, you can't tear it down, okay? You'd be hard-pressed to tear it down. So anyway, so here's an opportunity out of one of the buckets having to do with equity-focused services for affordable housing. So we can put a tranche of money, and I'm going to say we recommended $8 million, and the way we came up with $8 million is for 3 years we've been negotiating with a developer, you know, to come in and do that project, and every time they run the economic forecast, the economic model, you know, they come up with a differential that just says we can't afford to do this. That same entity, they will probably get tax credits. But so if you apply the tax credits to a cash infusion, then the developer can make money on the project. But we hope to have 94 affordable housing units, workforce housing units, for, you know, just think about the people working downtown for those individuals, but also on the ground floor, there will be some commercial or retail.
Yeah, I think about when money comes like this, and I got my arguments about how much we're spending at a federal level. And as you pointed out, the city is not like we lost the money. This is on top, but this is a chance for, I guess, things that don't have a current revenue stream, right? Things that aren't built into the system to open it up.
What you haven't quite said it this way, Sean, but things we're going to be able to do some things in affordable housing that don't make economic sense.
Right, they don't make business sense.
Yeah. From the private sector perspective. But it addresses a huge, huge need that we have in the city of Mobile. So it's a generational opportunity to really make a lick on affordable housing between the Gaithers project, the Woodcock development, and some other units that we will we hope to be able to build.
What is that process going to be like with that assistant? Do you already have private investors that are interested that you know about, or is it going to be, how's that process going to go?
So let's take the Gaithers project. I mean, again, it's headed up by Neighborhood Development Department, headed by Jamie Roberts. And again, he's been searching for somebody to do affordable housing in the Gaithers building really maybe longer than 3 years. And so what we'll do, we'll reach back out to him, assuming the city council approves funding a project like this. If they approve it, you know, then it goes to the point where we find the right developer that can bring the rest of the money to the table, you know, to complete the project.
All right. I want to shift gears here for a second to public safety issues. And maybe we just move past. We've discussed it, unless you want to comment on it, what seems to be the hubbub about semantics on this move of the first precinct. But if you want to address that, if not, just discuss, you know, why moving the first precinct, you know, is a good idea for Mobile.
Okay, it's a huge benefit for the entire city of Mobile to be able to put precincts in the most optimum geographical location, so that as we disperse our first responders, or specifically policemen, that they're coming out of the same, out of the right location. I'll give you an example. Upon being elected 7.5 years ago, Precinct 2 and Precinct 4 were housed in the same building at Municipal Park in the old National Guard Armory. So everybody that was being deployed into the Tillman's Corner area, they were spending anywhere from, depending on the time of day, they could spend 20 minutes or an hour in traffic to get to their beats.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the first moves we made, was to set up the location, the precinct in Tillman's Corner. The second thing we did was we built a better and more technologically advanced precinct downtown. We moved it from what we call, where it was located on Cathedral Square, to being located on Water Street. And then this one, the present location of Precinct 1 was at the very northern end of Precinct 1. And it was in a facility that was not designed to be a police precinct. It was a motor pool building. So by building out a properly designed precinct, now we'll be able to have additional classes. And this is what I'm getting ready to say is huge. Right now, the way we're set up, we can only have 2 academy classes a year, somewhere from 20 to 30 aspiring policemen. By adding this facility, it gives us the capacity to have 3 classes a year. One of the biggest challenges we have in the city is hiring policemen right now, finding qualified candidates for policemen. So the location of this precinct, not only geographically is important, from a training perspective, it's important. And from a hiring and retaining standpoint, it's important. I mean, it checks a lot of boxes.
Mayor, well, you know, I've had this discussion a couple times with Public Safety Director Patisse, but I mean, just the simple question as a Mobilian is, what are we going to do? Is this the move that overcomes this violent outbreaks in our city that seem so common?
No.
So what does
it? Sean, this move is one of multiple things that have to happen in our community. Just a few minutes ago, I was having a conversation about the expectations of police. Police certainly play a huge role in controlling the violence. You know, we typically think of them catching the perpetrators and hopefully preventing some of these crimes. But there are some social situations that exist, not just in the city of Mobile, but in America, that are very deep-seated, whereas a society, we've got to make some choices on what we're willing to do. You know, because of that, all of us are suffering from this same thing. I called for the next Big Five plus five of the 10 largest cities. We'll be meeting at the end of this month, and the focus is on violent crime, specifically gun crime. And so we will come together and collaborate on things that each of us may be doing that the other ones could do in order to reduce it. But, you know, and I'm not throwing rocks at anybody when I say this, but, you know, our court system, the jail capacities, the prison capacities, what's going on in the schools, what's going on in the breakup of the families in America? Where are the role models to try to make young people, you know, follow the correct path? So, and we're part of the solution, and we can use the office of the mayor to convene and collaborate, and we're doing that. But it takes a whole lot of people to say, you know, we have had enough. We're going to do this. And I'll just end on this note. There are a lot of parents or family members teenagers that they know they're carrying guns. And, you know, there's very little we can do to them unless we, for some reason, catch them and find out that they illegally have a gun in their possession. But there's a lot of things that family members and friends can do to help get the guns off the streets. And so we're hopeful that there'll be that recognition and we'll get better buy-in and participation in doing that. But we will continue to be relentless in looking at new ways, things we can adopt to curb the current wave of violence that's sweeping this country.
And you're obviously campaigning now, coming up in August, Election Day, asking for another term to keep tackling these issues.
Right. Sean, and I'm excited about the opportunity to serve four more years. You've heard me say it's an honor to be the mayor. I had hoped that we would have made more progress than we have up to this point. And as we're saying, we're not done yet. There are some great things that are on the horizon that are, I'm going to say, they're about two-thirds, four-fifths baked. And, you know, I just want to have the opportunity to make sure we push those across the finish line.
Right. Remind folks, too, they want to get more information about the campaign. Where do they go on social media or website? Where should they look?
Yes, just the website would be good. Sandy for Mayor.
There we go. Mayor Stimson, as always, I appreciate your time with us on the show, and we'll hope to get you back soon.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate what you do.
Thank you. Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile here at FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, to 156 FM Talk 106.5. Feinbaum on the way in just a couple minutes here. Tomorrow, staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams with the most current updates. That'll be at 6:32 and 7:32, kind of walking us through. He's been talking about the progress of this tropical system, what it means for our weekend. He'll continue those updates tomorrow and then as much as needed throughout the weekend. So that's tomorrow. Of course, he has updates running right now, but we'll get the fresh sheet off the teletype there. That'll be happening tomorrow morning during Mobile Mornings. All right. We got questions. It's stacked up, but I appreciate all the texts here. Back to the trucking conversation, which, by the way, if you didn't catch hour number one conversation with Mark Colson from the Alabama Trucking Association about the proposed toll on trucks on the bridge, you go back and check out that podcast as well. This texter says, lots of unnamed texter. So I know when I look at an unnamed texter, let's see, where is it? Unnamed texter said, if you're going to bring Mr. Kennedy in every week to put us conservatives in our place, can you at least bring in a counter argument? Gives conservatives a voice, too. That's all. Should I? First of all, I don't bring him in to put people in their place. I put them in because he and I usually will argue, which is entertaining, right? You had the Coliseum of Ideas. But, and he has his show on once a week as well. But, okay, for example, tonight, you went back. So, you have Kennedy for Alabama at 6, and at 8 o'clock, you got Common Sense Radio with Pete Rehm. You've got, let's see, I mean, I'll take myself out of it, because obviously this texter doesn't think I'm a voice for conservatives. Okay. I get called a Nazi, but, you know, whatever. So, what about Jeff Poor? What about his show? Does that, you know, we give voices to people that have voices. It's not a, So balance out. You know, I'd like to balance out. You give me the. It's not like a. It's not like a play. Believe me, why would I want to have somebody come in and put me in my place? A name texter. I don't think so. I'm that conservative you speak of. All right, police headquarters building. And we'll have to. So, a lot of questions more for the mayor. Listen, I have a feeling, y'all. I know how this works. People that are mayor of Mobile and people that want to be mayor of Mobile will populate these airways between now and the August 24th. So, don't worry. Get more chances to ask those questions. Y'all have a fantastic Thursday. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow morning starting at 6:00.